Tigers get exactly what they need from their pitching staff to get ready for their second straight game in 2 days today. We'll go to the box and get a preview of South Alabama. Auburn has their greatest season ever in college basketball. We'll talk to a coach who got them to the Elite Eight, but more importantly, what's it like coaching the round mound of rebound? And Texas A&M makes their hire a splash move for hoops in College Station. All these stories and more today, Wednesday, April 3rd, 2019.
Two, two, swing and a drive. Deep right center field. And that ball is gone into the second deck. And Bryce Harper, in his return to Washington, has crushed it.
Adams picks up Mills. Straight away, Aldridge. Dribble handoff, Bellinelli. He wheels out front against Carter. Right wing, catch and shoot three, Forbes. Sparty triple from Marco Bellinelli. 19 points for Bryn Forbes. And the Spurs lead by six with 105 remaining in the game.
That's an off-speed pitch. Hit deep to right field. Wheeler looks like he's having trouble locating it, and this ball is in the right field stands. You can pucker up and kiss that baby goodbye. Josh Smith hit a towering fly ball. Wheeler looked confused from the get-go. I don't think he ever located it until the end, and then it was out of his reach.
And a great good afternoon. That was Lynn Rollins. We had him on the show yesterday. The Tigers take care of business against Grambling. 9-0 is the win. And now they get ready to take on South Alabama. So Clay Moffitt, way to go. Son of Tommy Moffitt, strength and conditioning coach. Goes five innings. The Tigers get their second shutout of the year. And on a mini, mini roll, we'll have J.D. Byers, the voice of South Alabama baseball, on in just a minute. Really looking forward to talking with coach at Auburn when I was playing. And back in 1986, he took Auburn on their best run ever to the Elite Eight in the NCAA tournament. He coached some really good players, none more famous than Charles Barkley. We'll share some stories with Sonny Smith. And then it's hump day. An extended version of Hump Day with Mike Huguenin of The Athletic. We'll talk about a variety of topics, the Final Four, and got me thinking with the Alliance of American Football League shutting down and the XFL coming up next year, what's to stop a college football player from leaving college after 1 year or maybe not even going to college if he's good enough and getting signed up by the XFL? They can pay the great players up to $200,000 a year. Let them earn that for 2 or 3 years until they're eligible for the NFL. Could that be something that is going to happen because the XFL is targeting those type of players? Targeting them. So we'll discuss that and other things with Michael Huguenin today, plus hot topics, plus a great day on this day in sports history, birthdays and all that kind of stuff coming your way. CD back in the master control suite. He is spinning the tunes, pushing the buttons in the 237 Ruth Studios, making it all happen. And speaking of Auburn and the Final Four, head coach Bruce Pearl, this is their greatest run in program history. And Bruce Pearl, he said it best, man. The Tigers of Auburn, they're hungry for more.
Last year, when you go to the NCAA tournament for the first time in a long time, when you win a regular season championship, one of only three that Auburn's ever won, it was shocking and pleasing to me that at the end of the year, all those guys talked about was unfinished business. This is a championship club that made history, and our marketing was unfinished business, which means because it came from the players.
Came from the players. Unfinished business. Two wins away from wow. Meanwhile, on the other side of the bracket, a guy that's won a championship has been to Final Four after Final Four throughout his career, one of the best in the business, Tom Izzo, wasn't short. And what the goal is for the Spartans.
I think we're ready for this task. It's the connectivity has made this team a very special team in a lot of ways, but the team has had success because it doesn't get too far ahead of itself. It truly has taken things one game at a time. I think everybody wants to win a national championship, and right now all we're concentrating on is Texas Tech.
And that will be the nightcap on Saturday night in Minneapolis. It's early in the baseball season, but for one night, a special player made a very mundane game very, very special. Bryce Harper, now with the Philadelphia Phillies, made his first trip back to Washington, D.C., where he started his career with the Nationals. Went up against Max Scherzer, and I've always said it's not how you start, it's how you finish. Started off slowly, but then he finished with a bang, and Bryce Harper talked about his return to the nation's capital.
Here in the booth in the first at bat just reminded me that I have 45,000 people in Philadelphia screaming and yelling for me, through the TV screen and things like that. I have people out in right field screaming and yelling for me, and people behind my, the dugout today as well. So I'm just fired up to be able to be part of this organization. Excited to be part of this team, and I look forward to going to battle every day with them.
The Saints have re-signed cornerback P.J. Williams to a one-year deal worth $5 million, according to the NFL Network. He was a third-round pick in 2015 who missed most of his first two seasons due to injury. He was the top nickel cornerback for most of last season after Patrick Robinson suffered a season-ending ankle injury in Week 3. He saw a career-high 67% of the defensive snaps. He turned in a career year with 53 tackles, 2 for loss, 1 sack, 9 passes defensed, 2 forced fumbles, 1 interception, and 1 touchdown. So, after re-signing Williams, the Saints will likely have a similar cornerback depth chart next season as they had in 2018, though they could add someone to the group in the draft. Marshawn Lattimore, Eli Apple are the presumed starters, with Ken Crawley, who's been tendered as a restricted free agent, as a backup on the outside. Robinson is expected to be healthy and is the front runner for the nickel job, though Williams will have a chance to compete for the role. Justin Hardy and Marcus Shirelles will likely be in the group for special teams purposes, and Chris Campbell, a practice squatter last year, is on the 90-man roster too. So the Saints loading up. Meanwhile, the Texas A&M Aggies have hired Buzz Williams. It was the worst-kept secret in college basketball. Buzz Williams, a tremendous job at Marquette, a tremendous job at Virginia Tech. He's gone back to where he was an assistant coach before, and all the reports are indicating that Tony Benford, the interim head coach for LSU in Will Wade's absence, is going to join Buzz Williams' staff. I don't blame him for one second. If I were any of those assistant coaches, I would be out there looking for a gig right here, right now. Again, another day and still no word on anything surrounding LSU basketball. Not a peep from anyone. If the players and coaches have been told something by the administration, not one word has been leaked out. How much longer can this go on? There are reports that Arkansas is looking and talking to Steve Alford, who was the coach at UCLA, to possibly fill their vacancy with the Arkansas Razorbacks. So stay tuned to that. So a very, very busy day planned for you and yours. We are brought to you each and every day by Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. Should I say the all-new and improved Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. $15 every day gets you 15 wings, and a big old picture of domestic beer. They've got enough flat screen TVs up there, about 30 to 30. I can't remember. It's over 30 beers on tap. They've got everything. Great food. The Hooters girls. Flat screen TVs everywhere for you to watch whatever sporting event that is on. They've got it. They have got it. They'll have LSU's baseball game on tonight against South Alabama. They'll have the Final Four. They'll have everything. Everything on it. Hooters just makes you happy. Tigers now have won a couple of ball games in a row here. South Alabama from the Sun Belt Conference coming into Alec Box Stadium. Skip Burtman Field. The voice of South Alabama, J.D. Byers, joins us next. Hump Day Edition, the Jordy Helpert Show, on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Come on back. Fun show plan. Let's get it going.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. After beating Grambling last night, 9-0, after winning 2 out of 3 in Starkville against Mississippi State, maybe LSU's baseball team has got things on a roll here. They'll get back on the diamond tonight as South Alabama comes to town. 13-14 overall are the Jaguars, 3-6 in conference play. And it's always fun when we get to talk to the voice of the Jags, and that is our good friend J.D. Byers. And J.D. is on the phone with us now to give us kind of a preview and to talk about Sunbelt Conference stuff. J.D., good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm great, Jordy. Thanks for having me on, actually on your campus as we speak.
Hey, there you go. How's it looking out there? You like it?
Great. Just saw Mike the Tiger.
There you go. There you go. All right. So tell me about this Jaguar baseball team. You've played some really good competition, obviously. You played some SEC schools before. You've had some success in some big-time games. So where is this team right now?
You know, if we'd have had this interview yesterday at this time, I would have told you it's kind of doom and gloom, a 5-game losing streak. Had lost 8 of the last 10. It just wasn't looking good. Had not been able to piece every aspect of the game together, hitting, pitching, scoring, defense. Last night, it also didn't look good in the first inning. The Jags fell behind 5-0, but got a 2-run blast in the third, started seeing some success. A new pitcher comes in and started to piece it all together and came from behind and won by 9 at Hattiesburg last night, knocking off Southern Miss. So I'm not saying the ship's totally going in the right direction, but after seeing what happened last night, I think these guys are playing with a little bit of confidence.
That's always a good sign. Seems like you go as Ethan Wilson goes. He's your only hitter over 300. He's hitting 320. Must be a heck of a player.
He is a true freshman who kind of flew under the radar. He was offered a small, professional contract out of high school, but he wasn't on a whole lot of radars coming out of high school because he wasn't one of these travel ball kids. He wasn't traveling all his junior high and high school years. And he was actually a standout quarterback and played for his dad, who was the head football coach at Andalusia. And then, a couple of programs got onto him. We're very fortunate to have this young man. I think he's got a great career going, and he's starting to learn his craft in the outfield as well.
Okay. J.D. Byers, the voice of the South Alabama Jaguars, kind enough to join us. Who's pitching for you guys tonight?
They have not even updated me on that because Jace Dalton was going to be our midweek number two guy. And we're told his MRI, he's still not clear. They weren't sure how severe the injury was. Last night, went with Jared Proctor. He was one of the guys that could have gone into Tuesday or Wednesday, and he ran into trouble. It wouldn't surprise me, though, if Drake Nightingale doesn't come in. He's a weekend starter, but he got bumped so early when he ran into trouble over the weekend. His arm's still fresh. In fact, we saw him in the bullpen last night. He may be relegated to midweek duty, and we could see him. He's a true freshman that's a four-pitch fella. He throws about 50-50 hard stuff to the soft stuff and tops out about 90 miles per hour.
Okay. J.D. Byers kind enough to join us. Talk about the Sun Belt Conference this year. Tony Robichaud gets his career win number 900 for the Raging Cajuns last night. But there's some really good baseball teams in this league. Who have you been impressed by?
Well, a guy who just got to his 1,200th win, and that's the head coach at Coastal Carolina. And we all know what they did a couple of years ago, winning the national championship. And they're in our league, and right now they're playing as good as anybody. And what doesn't bode well for us, they're coming to our place. So we'll have the Chanticleers in Mobile coming up this weekend, and they're just playing lights out. I think the biggest surprise in the league right now is the Red Wolves of Arkansas State. They're guided by an old Mississippi guy, a Mississippi State guy, in fact, Tommy Rappo, who played for a legend there, and he's the head coach. And he's, you know, been a work in progress. Baseball's not always a priority, but he's recruited well. And they went to Coastal Carolina last weekend and took 2 of 3 from the Chanticleers. And I guess the other two shocks right now aren't who's playing the best, but who's not playing the best at all. And two perennials normally is South Alabama and Louisiana in the Raging Cajuns and the Jags right now are trying to get things back going in the right order.
Yeah, I'm with you, but it's not how you start, right? It's how you finish, and don't count either one of those teams out as of yet. What does a game like tonight mean when you get to come to LSU? Are the players excited about this opportunity?
Yeah, I think as storied of a program as South Alabama is and our fan support in Mobile, it may be a slightly larger facility and a few more fans, but they've been there before. Obviously, Mark Calvi in his 8th year, and traditionally under Coach Steve Kitchell, it's always been schedule tough, and try to keep that RPI up at the end of the year. So, you know, we see routinely some of the best talent and best pitching open at Clemson, in fact, and stole one from the Tigers on the road to start the year. We lead in the all-time series against some of the programs like Alabama and Auburn, and we've got Mississippi State coming up on the schedule next week. But they love being able to come in and see how they rank. Obviously, their work's cut out for them tonight against the number 9 ranked team in America, and they'll be very excited and hopefully carry some of that success over from last night into tonight's game at Alex Box.
J.D. Byers, voice of the South Alabama Jags. I'd be remiss. Spring football practice is going on everywhere. Talk about the Jags. How's the football program looking these days?
You know, we've got what will be a second-year head coach. The excitement's at a fever pitch on the football side of things because we're building an on-campus football stadium.
Yes.
Title sponsor in place, Hancock Whitney, and the Budweiser distributor just threw in $1 million to be the title sponsor of the end zone there. Michelob Ultra, South Terrace. So it's a lot of excitement. The region's been wanting it, the school, the alumni, the student body, and it's finally coming to campus, and that's what has a lot of folks excited around Mobile as the new stadium coming to South Alabama.
Wow, that's terrific. How many will it hold?
It's going to be right at 25,000. It's going to have a great backdrop. The Greeks and some of the on-campus housing is next door. It'll be adjacent to the new indoor practice facility. That's the largest covered practice facility in the state of Alabama, which runs adjacent to the two outdoor fields, the natural and the artificial. It's kind of playing in nice to the fact that, you know, the NFL Network and the Senior Bowl has been looking at Ladd Peoples Stadium as an aging facility. Mm-hmm. They really want to be here, and that'll help them from a practice perspective to have 4 fields available. And their cameras and their trucks can all stay in one place. And plus, we have the Dollar General Bowl that has expressed some genuine interest in coming to the new stadium as well.
Now, how are you going to build a building bigger than what Nick Saban has in Tuscaloosa? Now, come on now. Nick's going to get mad at you guys.
Yeah, I think he would like to design, though, because, you've got 120 yards of actual legal playing surface,
right?
But the recognition was there to add on about 30 at the end for the chutes and the lineman area for lineman drills, so that way, you know, 50 yards or half a field could be done for defense in the secondary and long pass routes. The other half could be for the offense, their long pass routes, all of their drills by position, and then the linemen have their own area down at the end to be able to go full speed, not worry about balls or wide receivers coming at them.
J.D. Byers, South Alabama, the voice of the Jaguars, kind enough to join us. Your impressions of the job Billy Napier has done early on for the Raging Cajuns on the football field?
You know, and I think I'm a little more qualified than somebody out of that program to talk about it because ESPN had me come in and do a 2-hour pregame special, a 1-hour postgame wrap for the inaugural Sunbelt Conference championship game this year. And they were a participant, and I got to look back at a lot of storylines and background on Billy Napier. And, of course, hung out with him a little while and got to know him at the media day at the Superdome in New Orleans. And I'm just overwhelmed with the way he leads. He's not a rah-rah guy that gets folks up at time for kickoff and then two series in, it's a letdown. If he's even keel the whole time, he's a great recruiter. I think he's already proven that. His systems, he has a great support staff. They bought in there, and they've really rallied around Billy Napier. Now, he may not be as a dynamic, out-in-the-community type fella, say, as a Mark Cudspeth was. He's kind of more of a behind-the-scenes, I'm just a football coach, I'll leave the promotions to somebody else type fella. But I think the future is very bright for him as the head coach of the Cajun.
J.D. Byers, South Alabama. Sounds like things are really hopping over there, man. I'm so what a great town. It's just a great place, great restaurants. I'm happy for you guys. I think things are heading in the right direction, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, Hoops had a lot of success this year. We got the former coach, you know, down at Nichols. Richie Riley's with us now, and he's won the most games of the season for almost a decade this time around. He's got that program in the right direction. The women made the WNIT and set a school record for wins in the season as well under head coach Terry Fowler. So Hoop seems to be turning the corner as well, and it really makes for a good year-round excitement when football, basketball, and baseball can eventually all get in the same direction and being very, very successful.
No question. Well, J.D., welcome to Tiger Town. Have a great time. It's a beautiful ballpark, as you're well aware. Should be a lot of fun, and we wish you guys nothing but the best throughout the course of the season. And thank you, as always, for being so available whenever we need you. And we'll be needing you soon because we'll be heading back to Lafayette not very long from now to take on the Raging Cajuns. So,
you bet.
You just take care, man, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Jordy. Appreciate it.
Okay, buddy. J.D. Byers, the voice of the South Alabama Jags. 6 o'clock, first pitch, 5:30 pregame show. LSU, South Alabama right here on 103.7 The Game. And then, of course, LSU will be hosting Texas A&M Friday, Saturday, Sunday, weather permitting, because it doesn't look all that great right here, right now. But we'll see. We'll see. All right, 27 minutes after the hour. We're on Wednesday, April the 3rd. When we come back, what's it like coaching the round mound of rebound? Charles Barkley. We'll talk to the head coach that did that and more next.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
And we welcome you back. As we well know, one SEC team remains alive in the college basketball season as Auburn has made it to the Final Four, and their run through their region, without a doubt, the very best in program history in beating Kansas, North Carolina, and Kentucky. No Auburn team has ever made it to the Final Four. One Auburn team made it as far as the Elite Eight back in 1986, where they were defeated by the Louisville Cardinals, and we are thrilled to be joined by the man that was coaching that Auburn team then and did such a wonderful job from 1978 to 1989, now serving as the color commentator on the Auburn Radio Network, the great coach Sonny Smith. Coach, I can't thank you enough for the time. You've got to be on cloud nine, my friend.
I really am. It's been so good to be around these players that are so loose, and Bruce Pearl, who's a little bit the same way, and it's been quite a run. I've really enjoyed it.
I mean, you were a character on the sideline, but nobody's quite like Bruce Pearl. He's like the reincarnation of the late Jim Valvano. I mean, he just coaches with his heart, coaches with his sleeves, and just gets after it.
He really does. He's the best motivator I believe I've been around. He does everything with a positive tone to it. And he doesn't, you know, even when he gets on a player, he comes right back with something positive. It's been really eye-opening to see the change in coaches today. It may just be Bruce Pearl, but I think positive motivation is now the name for the coaches of today. It wasn't quite that way for Dale Brown and Sonny Smith. Probably not.
I think this team that Bruce Pearl has put together is perfect for today's game. I think if that team, this current team of Auburn, played back and when we were around, it'd be a whole different story. But the game has changed so much.
Sure. Well, somebody asked me if the team I had in 85 could beat this team. I said if we played in 85, we could beat them. If we played it now, the style of play, they would beat us. And, of course, we'd be a little old going into the game. But we might have to play a half-court game, you know. No, yeah. I think this style of ball would be very difficult for the players of yesteryear to play. And I think you would probably agree you did it.
Yeah. Although I love that three-point line, Coach.
Yes, you did.
I would love that.
Well, it put a lot of guys out of work, I can tell you that. You think about it. Here goes another three. I'll be hunting a job next week if it doesn't go in. You know, like a guy, we're playing to go to the Final Four the other night, and a guy that only taken like two threes all year took the final shot.
Amazing.
Everybody thinks they can make this thing.
Amazing. Well, you've been following this team all year long. Was there a turning point in the season? Because ever since they got blown out by Kentucky in the regular season, they have not lost a game yet.
I think the turning point for the team was when Jared Harper just actually took over the team.
Okay.
You know, he was he became the man, and he decided who got the first shot, and he also, the team would be dragging a little bit, and he'd make some kind of play to pick them back up. I would say that. A lot of people would disagree with that because Bryce Brown was so he was kind of he'd been doing it all year, and there was not much of a fall off. He became a better player because of Jared Harper. Jared Harper got him the ball in situations where he had to make a play off the dribble, and he learned how to drive the ball to the bucket and make a layup and also to make the little short two-point jumper, which had never been a part of his game. He was 3 points. Or none, and now he has a total game, and I think that's because of Jared Harper made him that way.
You know, I think, and you may agree or disagree, but I'd love your opinion. The collection of coaches in the SEC when I was playing, yourself and C.M. Newton, then Wimp Sanderson, and Hugh Durham, and Coach Brown, and Ray Mears, and all these coaches. It was the Joe B. Hall. It was such a great collection of coaches, and it was a really, really good basketball league.
I think
it is again because the coaches are really, really good.
Yeah, and, you know, I think since the recruiting change, AAU probably control recruiting, I think we started dragging just a little bit in the SEC with the exception of Kentucky, LSU, and a few others. But I think you're exactly right. The game has changed to the point now that you can now recruit the best players and have a chance at them. Used to, you would live with three stars if you were in Auburn or some other schools. You would live with threes and you wouldn't have many fives. And the fives would go to selective schools. Now you have a chance of getting those, even though Auburn doesn't have any right now.
Well, you know, it's amazing. Everybody asked me, is the SEC now a basketball league? And I say, it absolutely is a basketball league because look how they're treating the coaches. They're treating the coaches like football coaches. If you don't win right away, you're gone. And we've seen several coaches dismissed. Bryce Drew hadn't had a long tenure at Vanderbilt. He's gone. So that tells me it's a basketball conference.
Well, it does, and I think it will continue to be. I think the thing that turned back the basketball program at Auburn was the new arena. They got a new arena, and it attracted a coach similar to Bruce Pearl to come because they fill a building every night. They got standing room only. You can't get a ticket. And I think some things like that's got to happen in the league for it to get, shoot its way up towards the top. And you remember, you could go when you played. There were some places you could go. If there's 2,000 there, it'd be a big night.
That's right.
But now you can't go anywhere that there's not 6,000, 7,000, 8,000, 9,000, 10,000 are sold out. Yeah. And so that's the big thing, because everybody got a better arena. That's basically what happened,
that's
I think.
Sonny Smith, kind enough to join us. He coached the Auburn Tigers, led them to an Elite Eight appearance in the 85-86 season. I've got to go back to the first time you ever saw Charles Barkley in high school. Your initial thought, and how in the heck did you – how was that recruiting process, and how was he to coach?
Well, first off, first time I saw him, I didn't think we'd be able to feed him. Our budget wasn't that big. The second thing I saw, and this is a true story, this is a true, the ball went up on the backboard. He jumped up and got the ball and threw it to midcourt on the way down.
Okay.
And to a player, and I knew there was something special there. And then I watched a game, and you remember the great name, Bobby Lee Hurt.
Sure.
Was like player of the year in Alabama. Yeah. He destroyed Bobby Lee in a high school game, and I knew that there was something special there. Now, was he hard to coach? Yes. But I think that
– How so, Coach? How so was he hard to coach?
Well, he was lazy. He didn't want to work hard in practice. He wanted to work hard in the game. Okay. Well, I thought old school, see, you think everybody should work hard all the time.
Yeah.
Well, if I had been smarter, if I had been a coach, if I had been a modern-day coach, for instance, modern-day coaches turn their heads for their great players and and take what happens for them in a game. Well, that's I was unwilling to do that, so it made it very difficult for Charles because I was really hard on him. I was hard on him for two reasons. He was a little bit lazy, and he was way overweight. And I wanted to get in shape so he could make it to the NBA. I didn't think they would take him at 280, 290 pounds.
Amazing. That's what Zion Williamson weighs now, but Zion's a couple inches taller than he is. So have you ever seen
him?
Is that the closest comparison to Zion, he and Charles Barkley?
Well, you remember, you've seen Charles grab the ball off the board and beat everybody at the other end, don't you?
He sure did.
He could do those kind of things as Zion does. And he's doing them at maybe 2 inches smaller, maybe three. He was like 6'4¾" when he came here. And I don't know if he gained an inch or not, but he never was what we listed. And we listed him so he'd look a little bigger. But, you know, everybody did that so they'd go to the pros.
Sure.
We were sending 6'6" up there if they thought it was 6'9". They thought we failed math, I think. You don't.
Oh, my God. Sonny Smith kind enough to join us. Okay, I personally think that Virginia's a perfect matchup for Auburn. They play the way they are, that flat line defense. They want to keep everything out of the paint. Auburn's like, thank you. We don't want to be in the paint. Let us shoot threes. We'll live by it. We'll die by it.
You know, you bring up a good point. That pack line defense, when they got pressure on the ball, four guys have got 1 foot in the paint.
Yeah.
Now, they got to be really athletic to shut down the threes totally. So you're thinking is the same kind as mine. I think we're going to be able to get threes up, and it's just going to matter where we make them. And the other thing it's going to be is whether we can get a couple of second chance points. We need to get set, and we were pretty good at that. That was one of the reasons that I thought we spurred here with all those wins in a row, because we got offensive rebounding. If you look at the stats in the SEC, we were up pretty high. Defensive rebound, we were down next to last. And the only way I could explain that is our two guards would take off when the ball went up so we could get that running game going. Mm-hmm. And that made three rebounders against five a lot of times. And so we didn't rebound well defensively, but offensively we were really a good rebounding team.
All right, Sonny Smith, you got to put the ball in the basket. Everybody tries to analyze this game and make it so complicated, but the team that shoots the ball well is going to be the team that wins. And what concerns me are these arenas where now you're going from a basketball arena, you're going to this big, huge football arena that they make into a basketball arena. And, boy, you got to get a lot of shots up and get used to that environment because it's different.
Yeah, and, you know, it's going to affect the outside shooters more than it does anybody else. And and we're going to throw up twice as many as we do inside shots. And that may be why we're leaving today. We're leaving today at 1 o'clock.
Yeah. One final question, and I greatly appreciate your time. If I was out there to be recruited, would you have recruited me and to come play for you at Auburn?
It depend on how much you ask me for. I thought you weren't going to get that for a minute.
I'd ask for an education and a place to put my head at night.
Oh, I'd have given you 2 scholarships for that kind of effort. I never could find a guy's name that started academic. You know, never had any guys with that kind of name. Hey, I had a guy made 1,600 on the college boards, and really, I thought I had it going. And he tore his knee up, but so I kept him on the roster anyhow because it made a great point.
GPA up, that's it. GPA up,
right.
No question.
Yeah.
Sonny Smith, that's why you lasted so long and did such a great job. Hey, have a great run at the Final Four. Enjoy the broadcast, and it is a pleasure having you on. You're one of my all time favorites, and thank you so much.
You are one of my favorites, too, and I'm not just saying that, but I probably have told you that before. Hey, look forward to seeing you sometimes. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Sonny, there you go. Sonny Smith, coach of the Auburn Tigers, 78-89, took them to the Elite Eight. Auburn's in uncharted territory, but he said the round mound of rebound was a little overweight. Yes, he was, and a little bit lazy, but when they tipped it off for real, Charles Barkley could flat out play. Hall of Famer. Yes, indeed. All right, we'll take a timeout. We will come back with more. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game.
Minutes after the hour, ShopRite Tobacco Plus, about 58, 59 of them throughout southern and central Louisiana. I got to tell you, they are spectacular. That one in Doosan is just remarkable. It is so cool. It's got such neat stuff in there. It's kind of like you can just walk around and spend an hour just looking at all the things they have. They really do it right at ShopRite. They really do. And if you can't shop right at ShopRite, you just really can't shop right at all. ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. It's really, really remarkable. CD back in the Master Control Suite. Hot topics still to come. Michael Huguenin will join us. We'll talk Final Four college basketball hires. We'll also talk spring football and some interesting things that have been brought up about, you know, how college basketball players can leave after 1 year if they're good enough and go enter in the NBA draft. With the new league starting, with the XFL starting, I just kind of wonder, and they are targeting players who are not yet eligible for the NFL, but who are great players. They're targeting them to leave school to come to their league. We'll talk about that as well. Speaking of pro football, the Saints, you know, the draft coming up, and they're so close to that Super Bowl run, so close. And they got the tight end from Oakland, you know, that really filled a void. But the wide receiver group, other than Michael Thomas, they struggled to consistently provide help last season. I think that's a high draft priority for the Saints. 2 years ago, the Saints had a trio of wide receivers with Thomas, Brandon Cooks, and Willie Snead. But they traded Cooks in 2017. They let Snead leave in free agency. And the team really struggled to find replacements. You know, they got Tanking Jr., that's Cooks' replacement. Which a lot of last season due to injury. As did Cam Meredith, presumed free agent replacement for Snead. Christian Kirkwood, another rookie, showed some promise. But all in all, the receivers behind Michael Thomas struggled to make an impact on a weekly basis. And everybody knew that Drew Brees was throwing to Thomas, and he still completed passes, which just shows how terrific he is. And despite those performances, though, last season, teams didn't.
Looks like we kind of lost Jordy there for a moment. Definitely a little less than ideal connection right now for Jordy Holper right here on 103.7 The Game. But like you said, hour number two, definitely going to be fun-filled. Hot topics, we're going to break that down. And trust me, you're not going to want to miss that. Just some fantastic stuff on tap for hour number two. Michael Hugonen, will have him on, I think, for a whole half hour. You can only imagine what they're going to get into, obviously. Get some Final Four predictions. They'll break down some stuff involving the world of college football. A lot of big topics hitting over there with Hump Day with Hugonen. It's a tradition unlike any other. Let's see if we get Jordy back on. Jordy, you there? Okay, must be rebooting. We're going to try and get him back on as soon as we can. Hopefully we can get him back on before the hour wraps up. Because trust me, we still got a lot of things to get to. We got to look around the world of sports. I mean, last night I mentioned that during the two-minute drill we had the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. They looked really smooth last night in a win over Southeastern Louisiana. The first of two games they'll be playing, actually. Tonight they'll be in Hammond, America. But one of the big surprises out of last night was Logan Savoy getting things done. First time he's been back on the mound in any sort of form or fashion as of late due to injury. And last night after the game, he talked about how great it was to get back on the mound and throw for 6 2/3.
Oh, man, that was great to be able to come back on the mound and start after everything I went through last year, coming off of surgery, not pitching too much this year, and finally getting the opportunity to come out and pitch like I can.
Yeah, definitely a big thing for Logan Savoy getting things done. But one of the big things, and then Tony Robichaud actually talked a little bit about him being there and be able to get things done on the mound. Here's the head coach of the Cajuns, who just racked up his 900th win as the coach of the Raging Cajuns, talking about a little bit about it.
Well, the only doubt I really had was, could he do it health-wise? Justin and Kerry Lampkin and him at Fusion Edics and Unlock really did a great job with him throughout the fall. And he got to feeling better. His elbow got to feeling better. And he got command over his breaking ball and command over his fastball. We still walked a couple tonight. But overall, for a true freshman, he was pitching good before and after the walk, but the bottom line is he did a great job for us on a Tuesday.
He really did, and I mentioned the fact that he reached 900 wins as the head coach of the Louisiana Raging Cajuns, eclipsed over 1,000 a while back. Definitely congrats to go out to him. But he said it's not just about him. It's also kind of gives a lot of credit to the coaching staff he's been around over the last several years.
It's not just me. Babs got 900 too, being with me, and Coach Simino and all, Coach Sheff and Matt Deggs and Harvey and all those guys. I mean, they're all part of this 900. And, I'd rather focus on trying to be a better coach down the stretch and turning this thing around and doing something with it instead of really worried about, a couple wins. But I appreciate it.
Definitely congrats once again to head coach Tony Robichaud, longtime head coach there previously at McNeese State, racked up over 1,000 career wins. I believe it was about 3-4 years ago he hit that mark, but reaching 900 wins as the head coach of the Cajuns, couldn't have happened to a better guy and a man who's definitely been a big part of this community over the last several decades. Just a great guy, and if you ever spend some time talking to him, you'll realize why I'm putting him over like this. We're going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break. Hour number two of the Jordy Holtberg Show coming up next. Hot topics, and I've got some hot ones going Jordy's way. Hopefully he'll be back in time for Hot Topics. But, sometimes the internet, it's a fickle mistress. And when you're out in Baton Rouge and you're broadcasting from here, sometimes the wires get crossed a little bit, if you will. Like I said, we got that. We got Hump Day with Hugonen and a whole lot more. You're listening to the Jordy Holtberg Show right here on 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Clint Domi, the producer, got to take care of things for the time being. But of course, we'll keep rolling on next.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Packers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans.
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers
have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
All right, hour number two of two, and away we go. A couple little technical difficulties that we're working on, but stay with us, be patient, and we'll make it happen. Yes, indeed. In fact, I think we are back and ready
to go, as we speak. So, CD, talk to me. We're good. All right, there we go. All right. Sorry about that, folks, but hey, it all works out in the end. So we got a busy second hour planned for you and yours. Michael Huguenin of The Athletic will join us. We'll talk all things college basketball, college football, some interesting topics out there for discussion. LSU baseball tonight taking on South Alabama at the box, 6 o'clock, first pitch. That means our pregame show will start right here on 103.7 The Game at 5:30. Tigers with a 9-0 win yesterday over Grambling, and they'll try and beat South Alabama today. Congratulations to Tony Robichaux, career win number 900 in Lafayette as the Raging Cajuns defeated the Southeastern Louisiana Lions last night. Now they'll reverse it. They're heading to Hammond as we speak, and the Lions and the Cajuns will play it again tonight in Hammond, America. So there you have that. Rumors, Buzz Williams heading to Texas A&M. Is Tony Benford leaving LSU to go with him? That's what everybody's talking about. Well, without further ado, it's time to take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. So, CD, we are back and better than ever. Let's hit that button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Being the electronic whiz kid that I am, I just love when we have difficulties. It's just like push the panic button, but whoo, take a deep breath and we are good to go. So without further ado, fire away at will, my friend.
Oh, yeah, Jordy, we got to fire away. We got to start things off talking about Clay Moffitt. He was definitely firing at will. Looked outstanding last night. And I think the Tigers may have finally found at least one of the guys to where they don't have to necessarily rely on the Jack/Johnny Holstaff approach. Oh, yeah. You got to realize you don't have a whole lot of options right now based off of how the injury bug has hit the Tigers at this point in the season. So you need to be able to save those arms, and Clay Moffitt definitely wound up coming up huge.
Well, you know, he looked up in the stands, and there was his dad, and he was like, if you don't pitch well, you're going to be in that weight room with me, and you're going to be running those sprints with me. So put the fear of that in. No, I'm just kidding. No, that's terrific. You know, that's exactly what the doctor ordered. That's exactly what Palmieri needed. He went 5 strong innings, and they got 2 more innings of relief out of 2 other pitchers that I got to be honest with you, I'd never heard of before, because they hardly ever pitch.
Yeah.
And so now tonight they'll try and get Mikhail Hilliard to do the same thing and to save that bullpen as much as they possibly can for the weekend. So far, so good. But South Alabama is a better ball club than Grambling. I'm just saying.
Exactly. Markedly better, but it definitely is a step in the right direction. And you talk about Clay Moffitt, how his dad was out there in the stands. I mean, his dad might have been the reason why that call got overturned. I'm just kidding, Jordy. With Clay Moffitt, to where he actually has a perfect ERA at this point in the season, even after what looked like a home run was then reviewed and called a double, Jordy. My goodness, that must have been really kind of nerve-wracking for Moffitt to kind of be like, I just ruined my perfect ERA, like, just like that. But no, it was a double, so he's like, oh, thank God.
I think the kid's thrilled to be out there and to be given a chance. So, you know, when there is misfortune to some, it opens the door for possibilities to others. And he has certainly seized that opportunity, and I'm sure he'll get another look in a midweek game and coming out of the bullpen, maybe even on a weekend if necessary. So good for him.
Yeah, it's great for him, Jordy. And now we got to talk about what's going on in the NBA, and that is Russell Westbrook. The man just put himself in very elite company once again, Jordy. 20-20-20. Only him and Wilt the Stilt, a man that's definitely got a lot of love over the last couple of weeks. or so just because his name's all these record books, yeah. And we're starting to hear his name a lot more as of late. But it got me thinking, Jordy, Westbrook, he's definitely been at it for a while. He's been with a team that's just never been able to quite get over the proverbial hump. So it got me thinking, Jordy, is Westbrook going to be known as one of the best to never win the big one, or could he wind up getting something going before he kind of hangs it up?
Yeah. That's a good point. If the playoffs started today, they would be matched up against the Golden State Warriors. One thing I'll say about Russell Westbrook, you know that you're going to get the value of your price of admission when you go watch him play, because he never takes a night off, and he always is going 99 million miles a second, and he's doing incredible things. I mean, 20 points, 20 rebounds, 20 assists, that is ridiculous. And a tribute to the much maligned, no one ever really talks about him that much, Wilt Chamberlain. The numbers that man put up throughout his career were just staggering. So to be in that company is amazing. You know, Paul George has been a good fit for them. I still think they're a very dangerous club with Steven Adams in the middle. But, you know, they got to get past their bugaboo, and that's Golden State, and good luck with that. But, no, what a tremendous, tremendous basketball player, and he did it for his buddy Nipsey. So, good for him.
And, I mean, I think that's everybody's bugaboo, Jordy, to be honest, because the Golden State Warriors have been a pain in the NBA's backside. I think that even more so now with Boogie Cousins at full strength. The dude has just been phenomenal. But, you know, Jordy, of course, the biggest thing everybody else is talking about is, without a doubt, the Nats and the Phils game last night. Bryce Harper, homecoming, a little less than warm. He's had the fans booing him pretty much out of the stadium. They were booing him even more after that home run late in the ball game. Is there a new rivalry brewing between the Nats and the Phils?
Probably so. But look, when he hit that home run, there were more Philly fans in the stands than the Nationals. The game was well in hand, and those Phillies took the train and headed to the nation's capital, and they were there. So I noticed Bryce Harper's changed his number. He's number 3 now, like the Sultan of SWAT, Babe Ruth. What a talent, what a player. And, yeah, Scherzer got him early. But Bryce Harper and the Phillies got him late, and what a debut for him in his first trip back to his old team. And he had the old belt on with the number 34 on it.
Yeah.
So the red belt from the Nationals, he's wearing that with the Phillies. So trying to show a little bit of love, but he anticipated that. He knew that was going to happen. Look, that's not his fault. It's not the Phillies' fault. That's the Nationals' fault. He said, I'm worth more than that, and I'm going to go get it. And he got it. Bye-bye, Nationals. See you later.
He got that and then some, Jordy, because, man, apparently the Nationals were lowballing the you-know-what out of him. And he said, you know what, I'm going to bounce. So I feel like if anybody needs to be booed, it's the ownership. If you're a Nats fan at this point, you need to
That's right.
And before we start,
they're undefeated right now. They're undefeated, the Phillies. So what a great get-out-the-gate start for them.
It's huge, Jordy. It's a huge start for them. And then, of course, I mean, you've got also – oddly enough, the defending World Series champion Red Sox having a bit of a hangover right now. That's
struggling.
As many
they can't pitch. They can't pitch.
They cannot, Jordy. But before we kind of bounce out of here, you talked about it right before we started Hot Topics about Tony Benford supposedly, reportedly, being considered as another guy to join Buzz Williams on Texas A&M staff. But apparently, according to Sheldon Mickles of The Advocate, this just came out moments ago, Jordy. It looks like he will still be LSU's interim head coach going forward. Because Benford has told The Advocate that he's still LSU's interim coach, and he hasn't talked to the university or Buzz Williams about the vacancy.
Yes, stay tuned. That can change in the drop of a hat. So stay tuned on that one. Of course, he's going to say that right here, right now. But that could change as soon as 10 minutes from now. So let's hold off and wait and see. Do you blame Benford? I mean, he's not going to be the head coach at LSU, right? I mean, that's not going to happen. Do you think?
No way. I mean, it's
it's LSU though, so anything's possible.
Well, Jordy, I mean, you got to think about it. If the sanctions that could come down on LSU are as bad as a lot of people might think they are, the worst case scenario, I think he could be. But if they're not, like, if it's not like, oh, hey, you're getting like a postseason ban for like 3 years or something, like if it's a lighter penalty, like we'll see with Ole Miss, I think you can wind up probably getting somebody just to handle that situation and be able to deal with everything that's in place due to those sanctions. And then once those sanctions are up, kick him out the door.
It's still a conundrum. Again, who knows what's going on? Nobody's saying much. Benford's a good soldier. He's doing what he's told to do at this point in time. But I'm telling you, if Buzz Williams comes in with an offer and A&M can outbid what LSU pays, he's gone. And I don't blame him 1 second if he is. All right. Thank you, CD. There's your Hot Topics for the day, brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce around. Right there in St. Martinville, the Biard family have been doing it and doing it right time after time after time. They have everything for your salad bars, but boy, they got the best hot sauce. I'm telling you, if you haven't tried it, do yourself a flavor. Try it. You're going to absolutely love it. And I bring a small bottle with it wherever I go, and I travel a lot because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. It just does. Do yourself a flavor. Try Cajun Chef hot sauce. The rest of the show, Michael Huguenin. We're going to knock it around left and right and down the middle next.
Dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is. Guess what day it is.
It's time to break down the biggest storylines this week with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Pump day!
Always my favorite day of the week. I always say that, and I really mean that, because I love talking to Mike Huguenin of The Athletic. He is so informed, so knowledgeable, and just downright fun. Mike, you talked last week how you were disappointed in the tournament because there was so much chalk, but we only have one number one seed in the thing. So how you feeling now with four teams left?
Yeah, the Elite Eight games were tremendous. A quick perusal of the NCAA record book. The four regions have been in place since 1950, and it appears that these were the closest collective Elite Eight games ever. 18 points margin of victory in the four games. Two of them went to overtime. I think the only one that could compare was the 2005 Elite Eight, when there were three overtime games, including a double overtime affair. But, yeah, the games on Saturday and Sunday were phenomenal, and the games Thursday and Friday weren't bad. So, and the Final Four sets up, you know, there's not a lot of big names there, obviously, but it sets up as an extremely intriguing quartet of teams.
Is it bad for college basketball that Duke's not in the Final Four?
Well, I'm not sure it's not necessarily this Duke, but I think casual fans associate college basketball, March Madness, with Duke, Kentucky, and North Carolina. And all three of those teams aren't there. Kansas, not there either. Michigan State is really, I would argue, the only blue blood still playing. I think the TV ratings aren't going to be great, but I think if you're a fan, you don't care about the TV ratings. You want to see
games.
Good basketball.
Yeah.
And there's going to be good basketball on Saturday and next Monday.
Yeah, you mentioned Kansas and North Carolina and Kentucky. It just so happens those are the three teams that Auburn beat, the most improbable of them all, to get to the Final Four. Just remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, Auburn, if you watch them during the regular season in the SEC, I think you came away with the thought that that's a pretty fun team to watch, but they're not fully formed. They rely too heavily on the three. Their defense is lackadaisical. They can win two games in the NCAA tournament, and then that will be a great season. But instead, they shot their way to the SEC tournament title, won a game in the first round. Frankly, they should have lost, and then caught fire, and now they're in the Final Four. I mean, the New Mexico State game remains one of the more mystifying outcomes in terms of the team that lost should have won the game. And Auburn sort of survived that one, blew out Kansas, blew out North Carolina, and then beat Kentucky despite Okiki not playing. So a pretty unbelievable run for the Tigers in the NCAA tournament.
Same thing basically could be said about Virginia, because Purdue should have won that game. Yeah. That was the best game of the tournament. That was remarkable. And the probability of the things that happened that had to happen for Virginia to send it into overtime, I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, Purdue played two of the most tremendous games back-to-back I can remember in the tournament. The Purdue-Tennessee game in the Sweet 16 was incredible, and then the Virginia-Purdue game in the Elite Eight was incredible. Virginia, you look at Virginia individually, and you're like, that's a good team, not a great team. But then they play so well together on the floor. They don't beat themselves for the most part. They make smart plays. They play solid interior defense, though it is interesting that the pack line defense, in some respects, invites you to shoot the three-pointer. And given that Auburn's the next opponent, I got to think Tony Bennett's going to have something in store. Because you can't let Auburn sit out there and fire away, because if you do that, they're going to hit 10 to 15 three-pointers and beat you.
Right.
But I think it's going to be interesting. I think Auburn could easily get upset because Virginia is going to slow the pace. And I still wonder if Auburn is forced to sort of slow it down, can they handle it? I mean, North Carolina, I think, thought, Auburn runs, we run better, we're not worried about it. Kansas was this overmatched, and again, New Mexico State should have beaten Auburn. So it's going to be interesting to see at the pace at which the Auburn-UVA game is played. My presumption is UVA will do everything it can to keep that game in the 60s.
You know, I've played in these football arenas that are converted into basketball arenas, and they do a much better job now of how they configure them, but it is different for shooters. I remember shooting in the Superdome, and there was no backdrop to it. It was like, holy cow, this throws you off. So it does not favor teams that shoot outside shots, so take that into consideration.
Exactly, and Auburn, again, they live and die by the three. I mean, they've been hitting them in bunches. A lot of guys on their team can hit them. Extremely impressive shooting the last three rounds. And you're right, they're playing in a 70,000-seat football stadium. You're right, the one thing you talk to players about, you talk to shooters. You know, if you're a forward, you don't care about the look at your backdrop. What are you talking about? Whereas shooters are like, in a regular, quote-unquote, regular basketball arena, the fans are right there. And in a football stadium-turned-basketball arena, it's like the fans are a mile away. And if you're used to shooting into faces, those faces ain't going to be there.
Yeah, it's different. It takes a lot to get used to. Michael Huguenin, The Athletic, joining us. On the other side of the bracket, Texas Tech is just, they keep getting better and better. They're really good defensively, and they've turned into a really good offensive team. I think that's a great matchup with Michigan State.
Yeah, and I think Chris Beard is an example. 5 years ago, he was coaching Angelo State. It's a Division II school in Texas. He's a guy who climbed the coaching ladder really rung by rung, and his team plays hard. They lost four of their top five scorers off last season's team. They got two grad transfers in. They adjusted basically seamlessly into his lineup. One came from South Dakota. One came from St. John. So very different kinds of basketball backgrounds. They play extremely well together, and the Culver kid is really good. And I think if you didn't watch Big 12 basketball much at all this year, you don't know who Jarrett Culver is, and now you do. And he was the player of the year in the Big 12 for a reason. He is really good, and they play, like you said, really tough defense. They're physically and mentally tough. Well, so is Michigan State. So there's a lot of intrigue, and I would argue, in both semifinals. You know, Auburn and Texas Tech making their first ever appearances. Virginia's making just its second and its first in almost 35 years. And Michigan State is a frequent visitor. So, in some respects, Auburn and Texas Tech and even Virginia, hey, we're here. This season has been a big, gigantic success, whereas Michigan State probably wants a little bit more. And Virginia, given what was expected this year, certainly wants more as well. Yeah. But it is an interesting – a lot of interesting storylines for each team and each coaching staff as well.
All right, so who do you like? Who's going to be playing Monday night?
I think it's going to be Michigan State, Virginia. I think Auburn's miracle run ends. I think Okiki is going to be missed. I think they played maybe a little bit better than they were, than even they expected against Kentucky without Okiki. I think, though, Virginia, a veteran team, a smart team, a physical team, and they don't look overly physical, but they do. They knock you around. And Tony Bennett's a really good coach. I think Virginia squeezes out a win. And the Michigan State-Texas Tech game to me is a toss-up because, yeah, they're mirror images. I think Michigan State's a little bit better offensively. I think Texas Tech actually is better defensively. The big guys, I think Michigan State's bulk is going to play a role. I think Texas Tech has some big guys, not necessarily as physical as Michigan State's big guys. So I think it's going to be Michigan State, Virginia.
All right. Well, and then the next question is, who wins it all?
I think Michigan State does. I think Cassius Winston, he looks like, you know, with the headband, he looks like a 1970s NBA guy. He's got sort of that old man game at times. but he is quick. He is tough. And Michigan State's big guys, they are really interchangeable. McQuaid, if he gets hot, can hit a bunch of threes at once. Izzo makes a living in April, March and April, and I think that does make a difference. I mean, Tony Bennett's never been here. Obviously, Pearl and Beard haven't. Izzo is used to this. His program is used to this, and I think that does give Michigan State a slight advantage, and I think that's why they're going to win.
All right, let's take a time out here. There's a lot more to talk about. We got to talk about the new hire at Texas A&M, who's going to take the UCLA job, who's going to get the Arkansas job, and we got to talk a little college football because spring ball is underway, and there's something out there that might really turn college football upside down. We'll talk about that with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic after these important messages. Stay with us.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. Second verse, same as the first. Michael Huguenin of The Athletic, kind enough to stick around and doing a little extended version today. Mike, we continue talking college basketball. What did you think of the hire of Buzz Williams from Virginia Tech now going to Texas A&M?
Yeah, I thought Billy Kennedy was a good coach. Buzz Williams is better. Buzz Williams is a really high-level coach. Now, he does wear on people. That's why he left Marquette. And people at Virginia Tech evidently aren't really surprised that he's leaving there. He led to an unprecedented success. I think he's going to do well at Texas A&M. It makes a league that has a lot of good coaches even stronger. And there's still obviously some vacancies available in the SEC, including Arkansas, which is, I think, a potentially really, really good job. But I think Buzz Williams is an upgrade over Billy Kennedy. And you look at Texas A&M's football and basketball coaching duo, Fisher and Buzz Williams. That is a really good coaching duo. And A&M has the money to pay him. And you got to give Scott Woodward the AD credit. He's upgraded his two biggest coaches in the last 18 months.
Arkansas is available. It looks like Vanderbilt. Apparently, Jerry Stackhouse, the former Tar Heel who's cut his teeth in the NBA and the G League. That surprises me a little bit. Does it surprise you?
Yeah, the new AD came from the G League, and evidently he has connections with Stackhouse.
Oh, that's
sort
right.
Sort of a rising star.
Yes.
You're right. That is a interesting hire. The G League, you're dealing with grown men who are making money playing basketball, and they all have aspirations to get to the NBA. Obviously, if you're playing in the SEC, you have aspirations of getting to the NCAA, though I would argue that coaching in the G League
is a little bit different than coaching at Vanderbilt because your kids got to go to class at Vanderbilt. Recruiting base is a little bit smaller than the typical SEC school because there are legit academic standards in place at Vandy that makes it more difficult to get players in. So I would argue a boom or bust hire. I think we're going to know midway through next season that Stackhouse was made to coach college basketball, or oh my goodness, this is a disastrous hire. Yeah. Jerry Stackhouse won't be in Nashville very long.
Yeah, I'm with you. Michael Hugan, The Athletic. Okay, UCLA is apparently going after Jamie Dixon, I think. I think it's like attrition. They've gone after some big ones, and they haven't gotten it. So we'll see what happens there. But I wanted to share with you and get your thoughts on Matt Hayes of Bleacher Report wrote an article about the XFL. You know, the Alliance of American Football folded. The XFL is going to start business up next year. They've got more money in the bank. They've got a guy that's a multi-billionaire that's going to be running it in Vince McMahon. They got $500 million in the bank. And he talked about Justin Ross, the wide receiver from Clemson, who the XFL has come out and said, we're going after college players who aren't finished with their eligibility. In other words, NCAA underclassmen who aren't available to the NFL because of that longstanding draft rule. You got to play 3 years removed from your graduating high school class to be eligible. The XFL saying, we'll take you. We can pay you up to $200,000 a year for as many years until you're eligible to get into the NFL. I thought it brought up a very interesting case. Do you think this has any merit, any legs to it?
No. I think that there's going to be a couple players that might do that, just like there were a couple of basketball players who left high school basketball, didn't want to go to college, went overseas and played or whatever. I think it will appeal to only a certain small segment of players. I also think if I'm an NFL official, this is worrisome. Obviously, if I'm a college coach or a college administrator, extremely worrisome. But I still don't think it's going to be a well-used path to the NFL. Again, it goes back to – I forget the kid was going to go to Arizona. He was a guard and instead played pro basketball overseas. It will appeal to some kids, but it won't appeal, I don't think, to that many. Plus, how good's the football going to be? And I think there's something to be said if you're going to LSU, if you're going to Clemson, if you're going to Ohio State, if you're going to Washington, you're playing in front of 80,000 people on a weekly basis. I wonder if XFL games are either going to go 25 or 30. I think the AAF showed that while football is the unquestioned major sport in the United States, the appetite during the non-football part of the calendar might not be as deep as folks thought. The XFL evidently has a better TV contract than the right. McMahon's got money. He's also tried this first, and it lasted a year. The people that ran the AAF said, we're going to be around. We got money for 3 years. What happens if a kid leaves high school? I'm going to go play in the XFL, and the XFL folds. I got 2 years to wait now. What's going on here? So I think there's a lot of – I think at first blush, oh, my goodness, this is going to change the way football is, people's past in the NFL. I don't think it's going to end up being that big a deal. I also wonder if college coaches, given that the XFL folks have said this, are going to say, you ain't allowed on my campus to XFL people.
Mm-hmm. Well, apparently, Oliver Luck, the commissioner, has sent out a letter to agents. Players aren't supposed to be dealing with agents when you're in college, but saying we can pay up to $200,000. So,
right. There's some irony involved considering that Oliver Luck's last job before the XFL was he was the number two guy in the NCAA. And people thought he was going to take over as the leader one day. And here he is now messing with the NCAA and the way it does business. So there's a lot of interesting things going on with the XFL. But I think it will appeal to certain players, but I'm not sure or convinced it will appeal to a heck of a lot of players.
Yeah, I guess it depends upon that player's situation, his background. A lot of these players already have children while they're in college, and maybe they need to make – and you know, so maybe it does fit a certain niche, but we don't think it's going to take away from the college football game.
No, I don't – and plus, even if it does happen to a handful of guys, if you're an SU fan, if you're a Florida fan, if you're an Ohio State fan, if you're a Michigan fan, you're pulling for the uniform more than the players. And I think that's the major difference between college athletics and pro athletics. You're a fan of Michigan. You're not a fan of Caron Higdon. You like the fact that Higdon is running for 1,500 yards. You're an LSU fan. You love the fact that Fournette plays for LSU, but you know that when Fournette's gone, somebody else is going to be their running back. And I think that's the difference between pro and college sports. College sports, there's great much point. More an affinity for the jersey rather than the player.
Great point. Michael Hugan in The Athletic. Spring football games are popping up left and right. LSU's is this Saturday. And to his credit, Ed Orgeron came out and bluntly said it. We ain't showing you nothing. We're going to be vanilla. We're going to be basic. And that's all she wrote. And so that's kind of refreshing to me.
Yeah, I think he's basically telling the truth and what every coach basically ends up doing. And you and I have talked about this for a decade. There's going to be kids that, oh, my goodness, look at that defensive end. He's making play after play after play on the spring game. Well, this guy's going to be a star, and then you never hear about him again. So think the spring practice is vital. The spring game is worthless. And I think the major thing coaches want to get out of the spring game, they want to get out with zero injuries. So I'll argue that it's bad enough to get a kid injured during spring practice, but at least it's doing something useful. If you get hurt in the spring game, that's like you get hurt riding your bike. Oh, my goodness, that should never happen, that kind of stuff. So the main thing for spring game coaches, please don't let anybody get hurt.
Well, to the point, I just asked TCU about that. They canceled their spring game because of injuries and lack of depth. It's crazy.
Right, exactly. And that goes back to the 15 practices, the 14 practices are vital because young guys are getting a lot more reps. You're seeing how players react against, in higher pressure situations because practice can be high pressure. But a spring game, that is not high pressure. And, again, I think deep down in their heart of hearts, if you told coaches, the 130 FBS coaches, okay, you get 15 spring practices instead of 14 spring practices and the spring game, what are you going to do? The vast, vast majority of them are going to say, okay, I'll take 15 practices and forget the spring game.
Yes. Michael Hugan in The Athletic. I know they've arrived because now Georgia's getting their name in the police blotter. Another incident with two more player arrests, and we've talked about this for a decade. If you're getting your name in the papers now, it's never good.
No, it's not. And I'm sure Kirby Smart, coming from the Nick Saban school, is extremely agitated at the fact that two guys got arrested. I think not that getting arrested is funny, but they were arrested for marijuana possession in dorm room 420. And that's I saw a lot of stuff today on social media. That was the main gist. Oh my goodness, these guys lived in dorm 420 and they got arrested on 420. So the 420, I guess, is the it was humorous. But you're right. The gist of this is, you're right. If I'm Kirby Smart, I'm extremely mad that my guys are getting arrested, and I have to answer questions about their arrest.
Amazing. Michael Hugan of The Athletic. But to Georgia's credit, I see they've got a home-and-home series in the works with both Florida State and Clemson. So those are some marquee matchups in the future.
Yeah, I think the Clemson series will match quarterbacks who are now 2 or 3 years old. So those things are so far in the future. And one of the guys I work with was asked about, why doesn't – I think it was – I can't remember which school, but why doesn't our school schedule these games 15 and 20 years from now. And this guy's point was, heck, there might not even be conferences 20 years from now. So some of this stuff is a little bit overblown.
Yes.
It does look cool on paper, and it is an interesting talking point, except 15 years from now, heck, Georgia and Clemson could be 4-8 programs. Who knows?
Who knows? You're right. There's a lot of optimism at LSU, man. I'm telling you, people are really excited. The hire of Joe Brady. I mean, you know, if you're around, I got to believe, if you're around Sean Payton and Drew Brees and you have half a brain with you, you're going to learn things by osmosis on how they do things. And if you can relate that and communicate that in a way that a 20 or 21-year-old college quarterback like Joe Burrow and the rest of the offense can understand it, man, you got to be better, I would think. Does that make sense?
That's the thing, though. Yeah, can you relate it so they understand it? Yeah, and you're right. I mean, if you're working for Sean Payton, that's an extremely positive sign because Sean Payton's a great coach, and presumably you've taken something from your time with Sean Payton, from your time working with Drew Brees. The question is, does that translate in any way to Joe Burrow, the LSU receivers, the LSU pass offense, all that kind of stuff? But and you talk about people are jacked about this LSU season. I think they're jacked at Auburn. They're jacked at Florida. They're jacked at Florida State, for goodness sake. But if you can't be optimistic during the spring, something's wrong with you. So, but you're right. I mean, LSU is one of the more intriguing teams, though I would argue that Auburn is the most intriguing in the SEC just because the annual Gus Malzahn must go. He's back to calling plays. He's got a new coordinator. He's breaking in a new quarterback. Who's going to be the quarterback? So, but the SEC West is really fascinating on a bunch of levels because the new quarterbacks at Auburn, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Arkansas, how much better can Tua get? What kind of running game is LSU going to have? What kind of running game is Texas A&M going to have? It's just a really cool division. I would argue more storylines need to be answered than usual in the West. Heck, even Alabama's got some concerns, and that's rare. So this is going to be an interesting next couple weeks as spring games finish, spring practices finish, and then we got 3 months of talking about these teams. There's going to be a lot to talk about in those 3 months.
I just wonder what's going to be the talking point come SEC Media Days. That's
Media
the big
days.
Question. There's always something, always, and we'll just have to wait and see what happens in this year when it all comes about. All right, Mike, so you got Michigan State cutting down the nets and spring football games everywhere. All right, sounds good. Always, never a dull moment, never a dull moment.
Nope.
Always appreciate your time, my friend. You take care. Enjoy the Final Four.
Oh, definitely. Talk to you guys next week. Appreciate it.
You got it, buddy. Take care. Michael Huguenin of The Athletic, brought to you by Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy. The all-new and improved Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway in lovely Lafayette. You got to go in and see it to believe it. I mean, the renovation is phenomenal. Look, the food's always been great. The service is even better than ever before. So much more to choose from. And televisions galore. Hooters, girls? I mean, come on. Hooters just makes you happy. We'll be back next on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, a fast-flying show. We got a few minutes left to wrap this baby up, so let's get right to it. We do it every day at this time of day, a little history lesson. It was on this day, April 3rd, the year 1989. The kid, Ken Griffey Jr., made his Major League Baseball debut for the Seattle Mariners against the Oakland Athletics. He's a Baseball Hall of Famer. 630 career homers, 2,781 hits, the 1997 AL MVP, 13-time Major League Baseball All-Star, 10-time Gold Glove Award winner. The kid was a legend. And remember, Home Run Derby had the hat turned backwards and just knocking it out the yard. On this day, Ken Griffey Jr.'s Major League Baseball debut, April 3rd, 1989. Wow. All right, if today is your birthday, April 3rd, happy birthday from all of us at KLWB 103.7 The Game and entirety of Delta Media. You share with the likes of 30-year-old Cam Chancellor. One of my favorite actors, Alec Baldwin, is 60 years old today. And happy 57th birthday to Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy. What a comedian, singer, actor. Does it all. Eddie Murphy, happy birthday. So happy birthday to all of you. Happy anniversary. If today is your day, hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. Okay, so LSU baseball tonight, South Alabama in town, 6 o'clock first pitch. Tune in. Keep it right here the rest of the day on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game show at 5:30. Coming up tomorrow, let's see. You know, the Run for the Roses is less than, it's about a month away, first Saturday in May. So we'll get a preview. Who's out there? Who are some of the contenders? Who are the pretenders? We'll talk thoroughbred horse racing with our guy. Cody Worsham will join us. The Schwab, talking NFL, the draft, free agency, all the stuff going on with that, plus much, much more on the Final Four. So that's all coming your way tomorrow. So come on back, and we'll see. Unless something else pops open and breaks open. So we'll see. Again, another day and another absolutely silent response from LSU on this basketball program. Nobody seems to. It's a ship without a rudder. It's just kind of going around in a circle, and we don't know what's going on. So we'll see. As of now, Tony Benford's still the interim head coach, despite Buzz Williams being hired as the head coach at Texas A&M. And they have a history when they were both coaching together at Marquette. And Buzz Williams wants him. But we'll see what happens along those lines. Okay, that's going to wrap it up. We have only one Wednesday, April the 3rd. So, look, it's almost 4 o'clock. I mean, you got plenty of time to make it a great, great rest of your day and night. All right? Make it a great one. And come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4 p.m., same number one rated sports station in Acadiana, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. CD, job greatly done. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to our partners for making it possible each and every day. Until tomorrow, I'm Jordy Helpert. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.